Gwen O'Keefe, MD, FAAP, is a pediatrician and the founder of PediatricsNow.com. She is the author of the book CyberSafe. Dr. O'Keefe, can you talk about the role that social media plays in the lives of adolescents today?
Social media is as intertwined in kids' lives today as it is in adults. It's just basically part of life. It's as part of life as breathing air. So I think the best way to think about social media and the digital lives of kids today is the same way we think about it in our lives. It's just part of life. It's not really different from any other aspect of life. It's just kind of a natural evolution in their lives as they grow up. They learn to walk and run and ride bikes and drive, and at the same time, they're learning to use technology that'll end up progressing to the use of social media venues like Facebook and Twitter and email and whatever else new comes around. I'm not sure we can say it's good or bad. What makes any technology good or bad is how you use it, just like a car or something in the kitchen. It's how we raise our kids to use the technology that becomes good or bad. If we give them a lousy role model at home, if we're using technology to lash out at people, if we're texting while driving, if we're standing in line at a coffee shop always using our cell phone, they're going to mimic that and use it in bad ways. What we have to do is provide a healthy path and show them the best way of using it. But we also have to remember that they're kids, so they're going to have lapses in judgment and make mistakes and be there to help steer them in the right direction.
Does their social media use affect the relationships they develop with their friends?
I think it can. You know, I think the difference between today's generation of kids and past generations of kids, including our own lives growing up, is that they do have technology. So instead of just talking to each other on the phone and in person, they're using text to communicate. And that sometimes has an advantage. They can send a quick communication to each other and say, hey, we're meeting at 5 o'clock today. But it can also have the disadvantage of they don't necessarily learn how to appropriately communicate and when the best way of communicating is. They lose that face-to-face contact. So what we have to help them learn is, when do you use technology to communicate, and when is it best to put down the technology and either pick up the phone and have a conversation, what they consider the old-fashioned way, or do something face-to-face. They find that much more uncomfortable and threatening than even a generation or half a generation behind them. What we have to really work with them on is feeling comfortable with that face-to-face communication. They find it confrontational to even talk to a teacher or a peer about something that bothers them instead of shooting an email or a text. So that's a big hurdle for a lot of today's teenagers. And I don't think it's a hurdle they can't get past. It just creates a little bit of extra work for them.
What can parents do to keep their kids safe and help them have a good experience online? And what do adolescents need to learn about being responsible digital citizens?
I think the best path parents can take is to first not be fearful of technology themselves. We have to recognize we live in a technology-infested world. The best way to help our kids is to not run from it and to not ban them from it. When you do that, that's when misuse happens and they turn to other sources to get their guidance, either peers or the internet itself. They're not going to necessarily learn the best way to use it that way. If you raise them from the time they are very young with technology as part of just a healthy life, they'll learn the rules of the road as they get older. We would never allow our kids to just one day wake up and cross the street without our guidance and first learning how to negotiate like the living room and then to learn how to negotiate the backyard and then to walk with us holding our hands and then to learn how to walk with us maybe a few steps behind them. We teach them how to have that independence with us nearby and then a little bit further away. We need to do the same thing with the digital world. We need to get them online and using technology with us partnering with them, starting from the time they are truly toddlers and showing interest in technology, there's technology geared for them on both computers and iPads and even cell phones that is educational and age appropriate. What we have to do, though, is create a balance. The younger the child, the less time they should be on technology. And kids under 2 should never be on technology. They really don't need the screen time. They should be playing outside, exploring the world, learning how to use their body. Parents always balk at that. They say, well, you know, what about cooking and, you know, times we have to use the bathroom? It's against the recommendations of the American Academy of Pediatrics, and it's not going to provide your child any value. But we've all had to do it. You have to live your life as parents, and a little bit of technology and screen time to do that is perfectly fine. Over the age of 2, I think it's appropriate to start teaching your kids digital citizenship as they're learning to be good citizens already.
You talked about setting limits on how much time kids are spending online. What is a good rule of thumb for daily use, and do you have some advice on practical ways parents can make their kids stick to those limits?
It's really challenging because if you look at the limits that we try to set through the AAP, we always talk about 2 hours. But that becomes really hard to enforce as kids get older and homework comes into play. So where I look at that two-hour limit is really for entertainment and recreation. For movies and TV shows and video games, 2 hours is a heck of a lot of time. To really sit in front of the TV and watch a movie and a bunch of TV shows and play games, I think 2 hours for all children, including teenagers, is a lot of recreation time. As kids get older, though, and they have to negotiate their lives for social lives, for safety and communicating at home, for homework, I think that two-hour rule flies out of the window very, very quickly because they do need to use the computer, and a lot of schools are going to laptop and iPad programs. It's really recreational screen time we worry about, and making sure kids are balanced when they're not in school and doing things offline. Are they outside playing games? Are they doing sports? Are they offline doing something that makes them happy, like a musical instrument or dance or art? They should have a nice balanced life of plugged in time and unplugged time. And if they're not doing that, you should worry about their screen time, including school time. I worry about the kid who's always plugged in, even if you're rationalizing that it's academic. Kids should be unplugged for some of their day.
What advice do you have for parents who are considering whether to give their child or teenager a cell phone or a smartphone?
I think you have to consider why you're doing it. Smartphones are very expensive, and they are little computers. They can connect to the World Wide Web. They have applications that are not always appropriate for teenagers, and they can do things and access content that we can't always control as parents. You have to first take a step back and ask yourself, why are you getting this device? Are you doing it to keep up with the other kids, or is it providing your child something that they truly need? I don't really believe kids need iTouches and iPhones in high school, yet a lot of them do. Now, that said, as parents get their own iPhones and have the last generation of iPhones sitting around, if you have an older teenager at home in high school, they may be mature enough to handle it. If you have a junior or senior in high school, those kids are pretty mature, and I think the best way for them to learn how to handle a smartphone device is with you at home before they go off to college. So for the older teenagers, a smartphone may be an appropriate device because in college, they're going to come in handy. They're going to use those applications as educational tools in college, and even the older high school kids are starting to use those educational applications in high school. Some of the educational applications, especially for kids who are driven students, they use those apps. They truly do. So if your kid is a driven student and those apps are providing a benefit beyond just the recreation of YouTube and Facebook and Twitter, an iPhone or some sort of smartphone device may be appropriate. But for a younger high schooler or middle schooler, it's a lot of information and distraction. So I would tend to shy away from those devices initially. You may want to test the water with an iTouch. See how your child does. Can they handle the amount of information? Can they work with you on limits. So you can say to them, shut it off, we're having dinner now. Put it away, don't take it to school. Because at school, it's a prime target for getting stolen. So you really have to make sure your child is ready for it. I don't believe in middle school a child needs more than a basic cell phone. It's a great way to communicate with home. Kids really are starting to be more independent, and there aren't public phones around for kids to access to call home if they miss the bus. We have to be realistic. The concept that, oh, well, they can just go into the school building and call home, that can't happen in every school. Sometimes the kids leave the school building and the doors get locked. Sometimes a cell phone is needed. And for kids who have medical problems, I think a cell phone is especially crucial, even in elementary schools. But you still can get basic phones, a phone that's just a phone. However, I will throw out there that all phones now come with cameras. So you do need to sit down and talk to your child about the appropriate use of picture taking, make sure they understand what is an appropriate picture to take, and if they can get texting and email on their phone, you really do have to talk with them very specifically and concretely about cyberbullying and sexting, because they will likely get some picture or communication that is upsetting and inappropriate, and they need to know how to handle that.
How can parents monitor their children's media use, whether that's on a smartphone, tablet, or computer?
The difference between a smartphone and a computer is the portability issue. With a computer, even a laptop, we can work with our kids on controlling it. We used to tell families, keep the computer in a public place in home, in the kitchen, in the living room, someplace where you can help monitor what your kids are doing. But nowadays, that's becoming very challenging, depending on how the house is set up or with everybody having laptops. Many families are finding the concept of a family computer is not realistic anymore. So we try to be flexible with families on how to work around that recommendation that we've had for a very long time at the American Academy of Pediatrics. A more reasonable recommendation for laptops, for example, is have your kids keep their door open where you can see the screens and pop in. I do that with my teenagers. They have laptops, and if they were both in the kitchen doing homework, we'd have World War III breakout. So we just have them do their homework in their rooms, and one of us pops in all the time. And if you raise your kids in a way where they have good digital responsibility, that really works. In our high school, they're going to a laptop program. There is just zero way that we can monitor every time they are on their laptop. So what you really need to do is sit down and have a nice conversation with your kids about this is how we expect you to use it. This is when it's going to be turned off. Kids that are busy and doing a lot of homework, they want to get off that computer and do something else pretty quickly. The kids you have to look out for are the ones that are so glued to Facebook that they'd never get off of it. And for those kids, you just create a home rule. It's easy on a laptop. It's easy on a desktop. Where it's not so easy is on a smartphone, where they're carrying it all the time. They can put it in their pocket, in their purse, in their backpack. You have no idea what they're doing on it. And more than that, you can't really monitor it. So if you're worried about your child, the monitoring programs that we can put on a computer aren't quite as sophisticated as on a smartphone. You can get some programs. All of our cell phone carriers have parental locks, but most kids can undo those. So the best way of working with your kids on a smartphone is to have a plan where everybody charges it in some public place at 9, 10 at night. That phone has to leave the bedroom, and that makes really good sense for sleep. Some of their friends don't sleep, or they're up till crazy hours because they're teenagers, and the texting and the beeping of the phones will keep them up at night. Have everybody charge the phones in the kitchen or in the den or some computer place. We have a little charge pad in my office at home where my daughter just charges her iPhone, and that's a great way for her to get the phone out of her bedroom. Before she started doing that, she would just hear the beeping of texting and all sorts of stuff at night, and it was really killing her sleep. For my younger high schooler, she doesn't have an iPhone yet. We're just going to wait until she's a little bit older. She's perfectly fine with it. She finds the thing big and bulky and just doesn't want to carry something so big right now. Also, remember to tell your kids that these are expensive devices, and if you buy it for them, that's your trump card. that you actually own the device. You're actually paying the bill. So you reserve the right always to check it and make sure that they're not going online and going to areas that you don't want them to. You can check the history of their Safari or whatever browser they use on their smartphone. You can check their applications and see what they're doing. So work out a system with them where you can make sure they're using it smartly. And if they're not, take it away. Get them a phone that's a little bit less appealing in terms of distraction.
Can we talk about apps? There are hundreds of apps available for smartphones and tablets, and many of them are marketed just for kids. How should parents navigate all those choices?
Most of the apps are just dumb and fun. We have to be very realistic about that. There's a 500,000 and growing apps on the iTunes store, and last count, 250,000 on the BlackBerry store. There's a lot of apps out there. Most kids want a few games. So talk to them about the games that make the most sense, like Angry Birds or Solitaire or Words with Friends. And if you help steer them towards a couple that make sense, they're usually very happy. They might want the Facebook app or the Twitter app if they use it for school. And interestingly, a lot of school journalism programs are using Twitter. So your kid may be one of the rare teenagers that needs it for school. So you have to be really careful about some of the apps, especially the ones that include pictures. But talk to your child, because what looks fun may actually have a bullying component. There are some apps where you can turn people's pictures into all sorts of craziness and then send it back to other people, and it goes out on the World Wide Web, and then what seems kind of like a funny joke between two people might get out and about and actually be considered cyberbullying. So I think it's just a matter of choosing the apps wisely. What you can often do is have a shared iTunes account in a family where for a kid, even a teenager, to get a song or an app, they have to just let you know. And teenagers who have a decent relationship with their parents often are fine with that. As they get older in high school, juniors and seniors, you can open up the wallet a little bit more and give them their own account. But certainly for younger teens, I wouldn't have them have their own iTunes account. It's way too overwhelming, and they can just get lost in this endless choice of songs that might have explicit content and apps that are inappropriate. It's just too much.
Should parents feel okay about handing over the iPad to entertain their kids for an hour with an educational app or a fun app?
If you want your young child, for example, to be distracted, you can get all sorts of interactive books. If you're really traveling, going far to visit grandma, you might need to distract them with a movie or some sort of game. It's okay for a limited amount of time, but do it in those specific circumstances. You're going on a long vacation. You have to get through a 15-hour flight. You're going to bend the rules a little bit. Try to choose content and games that aren't totally mindless and poke fun at others, so at least the kids aren't internalizing something bad. And I think you can do that in a way that makes sense. You can also be there with your kid. I think a lot of people make mistakes, whether it's at the doctor's office or a long trip, where they just hand over a digital device and then let the kid go to town. Have some of that time be interactive, where you're watching the movie with the child or reading the book with them. And I found a lot of kids on these long flights would start to get antsy when they were trying to make use of their time, but they wanted the attention of their parents. The ones who did best were the ones who the parents were engaged with the child. You might end up watching 6 hours of Disney movies, but your kid feels you're with them, and they're going to get through that.
Do you have any final advice for parents?
We have to not throw the baby out with the bathwater. What makes technology good or bad isn't the technology, but how we use it and how we help our kids use it. So if we raise them starting young with knowing how to use it and get them involved in it as they get older, they will use it smartly. In my book, CyberSafe, I have a whole chapter on how to start kids off on technology and even include, you know, what do you do with your preteens. There are Disney sites geared towards playing games with kids online to get them used to the online world through anonymous characters, and sites like Club Penguin or so popular because it teaches kids the rules for the road long before they even have to confront Facebook. Parents have to realize that what looks like a game to them are training wheels for when they are old enough to handle the responsibility of Facebook. We would never let our child have a drink before they were the right age or get behind a wheel of a car before they were the right age. Yet for the online world, we bend the rules all the time, and we create the problems as parents. We have to be the ones to say, no, you're too young. You're too young for that smartphone. You're too young for Facebook. And if we do that and we help our kids just slow down and get online when they're the right age, they will be fine. The amount of cyberbullying will go down, and the amount of things like sexting will go down. It's when kids get online when they're not ready, because they're kids, that all sorts of issues start.